Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Mike Huether served as mayor of Sioux Falls from May of 2010 to May of 2018. During that time, the city experienced five straight years of record-setting construction. Population expanded and quality of life projects like an event center, an indoor aquatic facility, and indoor tennis and ice facilities took center stage. The city also grappled with controversy and disaster. An ice storm in April of 2013 and history-making rain event challenged infrastructure and services, but not the spirit of the citizens. Huether's ambitions for public service started at a young age, but he came to office from the private sector after years in the banking industry. He tells that story as well as stories of his time as Sioux Falls mayor in the book Serve, Lead, Win. Mike Huether joins us in the Kirby Family Studio inside SDPB's Sioux Falls studios in downtown Sioux Falls. Mayor Mike, thanks for being here. We appreciate it.
Lori, I couldn't be more pleased to be here. Thank you.
You're going to be called Mayor Mike forever until there's some other adjective.
Well,
right?
I'm honored by it. I am. You know, people call me Mayor Mike all over, you know, the state. And that was one of probably the things that I was just most blessed by, is that folks were covering what we were doing in Sioux Falls, and they really cared about it. And I still miss it today. So yeah, whenever anybody calls me Mayor Mike, I'm really pumped.
Yeah. Let's talk about leadership development and go back to before your time in public service, even as a child, you were thinking about public service, but you worked at Citibank, Premier Card, and these were organizations where you were maybe one step ahead of, like, you know, going in and saying, I'm interested in leadership development. What do you have? And those organizations were saying, well, we don't have anything for you, young man. And then all of a sudden they did. So let's talk about leadership development. And why did you have a sense at such a young age that was even a word and that was a path when other people weren't laying that path in front of you?
Yeah, And this is in the book, Serve, Lead, Win. But, you know, right from an early age, I had to grow up pretty dang fast. And that includes being a leader at times, including in my own family. When, you know, my dad had some real difficulties in his life, and so that impacted our family. And as the oldest of four kids, you know, not only my dad came to rely on me, my mom definitely came to rely on me, especially after my folks were divorced. And then I went from there. I just really wanted to tackle stuff, tackle life. And yes, I wanted to be somebody, especially from a divorced family with no money and bad buck teeth and a helmet head for a haircut, living on the poor side of town. I had these goals, I had these ambitions, and much of it included, you know, some leadership. I've got a history of really getting involved and trying to make good things happen. And I still try to do that today.
Tell me a little bit about Miles Beacom and just what he meant to your life as far as there's more than one chapter where he comes up and, you know, you say, hey, Miles, this sounds familiar, doesn't it? He meant something to you.
He does, and he still does today. Miles and I go back a long, long way. In fact, when I got done with the first ever Citibank South Dakota Management Associate Program, my first boss was Miles Beacom in the risk analysis unit at Citibank South Dakota back in 1986. And then Miles and I, you know, we not only became friends, but then again, we worked together at Premier Bankcard and First Premier Bank. And I've got lessons learned at Citibank when we worked together. I've got lessons learned at Premier Bankcard and First Premier Bank when we worked together. And I still have lessons learned today, not only from Miles, but others that have really inspired me as we try to make a difference, not only in corporate America, but maybe more importantly, in stewardship roles, you know, sharing our time, our talent, and our treasure as an outward sign of our love. And Citibank, they really made a difference. They really taught us. And I think that we continued that on the Premier Bankcard and First Premier Bank, and now even more. And I took it as far as I became the mayor. And I think that was, you know, a true stewardship role.
Do you think businesses today, you know, from what you know of businesses in Sioux Falls, for example, are investing in leadership training in a way that helps develop the next generation of leaders, whether it's in public service or whether in business?
Well, I mean, I was really fortunate. I had the opportunity to truly get trained in every aspect of Citibank back in the mid to late 80s. And then that training continued. For companies that do a special effort in terms of training programs, management training programs, leadership programs, they're ultimately going to win because of it. But I don't think as many do it as I wish they would. And I think that it's, I think it's an investment that will pay off. But, sadly, I don't think as many businesses do it as they should.
At an early age, you had your eyes set on being governor of South Dakota. You even have a binder that is the sort of, Mike Huther for governor.
I still have that binder.
What's in it?
A little bit of everything that I thought was going to be important if I tackled, the goal to ultimately become the governor of South Dakota. I mean, it's got everything in there from, the policies at the time, the issues at the time, the marketing efforts, the ground game that it would take. It had, names of people who could help me on that journey and so much more. And ultimately, I didn't run for governor. I ultimately ran for the mayor of Sioux Falls. And so I just kind of converted the stuff that was in there in terms of Mike for governor. I converted it to, Mike for mayor, or at that time, my man Mike for mayor. And I think it certainly played a role back then, even though it wasn't for governor. It played a role in my ultimate success in being elected mayor.
Was it something that you used to, I guess what I'm getting at here is the act of collecting material for this binder, the act of seeing Mike for governor, even though you didn't have an active campaign, no one else necessarily knew, unless they were close to you, who this Mike Huther guy even was, right?
Right.
But the act of going home and putting things together had to help keep you motivated, on track, inspired, almost like you're declaring to the, to the universe, this is what I'm going to do. Or, how do you sort of see that the process of the binder, not just the binder itself?
I set very aggressive goals in everything that I do. And I've got a plan to tackle all of those goals. And when I was the mayor, I mean, people saw that. When we put our mind to something, we built our little binder that ultimately helped make it happen. So my process is that I want to be prepared. I want to do my due diligence. I don't want to leave, any stone unturned in my preparedness, because ultimately, I do want to make it happen. When I thought about, running for public service someday and at that time running for governor, I was darn serious. And I'm still serious today. There's a lot of things that I want to do before I pass away. I still think about, public service today, whether it be running for governor of South Dakota or what some other role. Yeah, I think about it all the time. And I've always got another couple pages that I can add or are adding to the binder still today.
So you begin this campaign for mayor without not a lot of name recognition, and that's what the polls tell you that sort of mercilessly time and time again, that, you're out there with your My Man Mike truck, you're shaking hands, Cindy, your wife, and you are, really hitting the, feet to the pavement, and yet you're not making any traction. You're way in the back of the pack.
We were.
You don't give up. You still kind of believe. Because of what you're hearing from people, you still believe that it's maybe a race between you and Kermit Staggers.
That's right.
Which the polls tell you is not true.
That's right. I not only did I put my heart and soul into that running for mayor, But I had all these other people that were doing the same thing. And we were doing it the old-fashioned way, the boots on the ground way. And, you know, we were everywhere. The My Man Mike truck was everywhere. I was shaking hands, kissing babies in the 100-degree heat and dust and wind, as well as in the frigid temperatures before a basketball game or a wrestling match at one of the local high schools. But yeah, Lori, it was so crazy is I thought everybody knew me, or at least after, you know, campaigning for 8 months that everybody knew me. And then the polls came out and found out that ultimately, you know, they didn't. But again, I wanted to achieve the goal, and everything that I do, work is a big, big part of it. And as well as people supporting me and working their tail off too. And so, yeah, we keep working, we kept working, and ultimately, we hit our stride near the end of that campaign, and it started to connect with people. And then ultimately, yeah, we were elected.
And largely it's this issue that connects with people, because you're hearing, yeah. You know, you're campaigning in a Sioux Falls that is, you know, sort of reeling from the recession in 2008.
That's right.
A little bit. And you're hearing, even though it wasn't as bad here as it was across the country, this event center issue starts to sort of rise in your consciousness as this is something that people really care about. What were you hearing at that time that made you think, like, if I promise this event, if I can figure out how to give people this, they'll put me into office?
And it was a surprise, because you're right. The economy was not good. The roads all over town were terrible. People were not, you know, excited. They weren't confident. They weren't positive. It was a downtime in Sioux Falls and in South Dakota and in America at the time. But what was interesting is that I was, as I was going around meeting all these people, the topic that kept coming up over and over again, young and old, rich or poor, east, west, north, south, was this event center topic. People finally wanted it addressed. They were tired of the dialogue, tired of the spin, tired of the, yeah, we'll get it done maybe someday. They actually wanted it done. And so I approached my campaign team near the end of the campaign and I said, I truly do believe that this is the topic that people want addressed the most. And we put all of our chips on that number, on that color near the end. And boy, it really paid off. But it was controversial, because my approach was a little different than what had been utilized in the time. But I really did feel it was the right one. And ultimately, not only did it help me get elected, but then after I was elected, of course, we tackled it head on and finally got it done.
Yeah, Rob Oliver tells you, you know, you got to do this now. That's not that you weren't going to do that on your own, but he kind of takes you aside and says, "This, it's time." Now, interestingly enough, Steve Hildebrand,
yes,
is involved in your campaign. And then when the event center, so he helps you get elected. And then when the event center story, you know, sort of starts to unfold, where are we going to put it? Steve Hildebrand is the person who comes out and leads a very effective campaign to build this thing downtown. And if you've been to Sioux Falls, you know that it is not downtown.
That's right.
That the other idea and other location won. Take me behind the scenes to some of those conversations, not only about how do we get this built, but where do we get it built?
With anything that you do in public service, every decision that you make, you're going to have folks that are going to disagree with you. And that couldn't have been more apparent with a major issue or a major opportunity like a new event center. People wanted it in a certain location. People wanted it a certain size. People wanted certain amenities. People wanted it paid for this way or that way. And so everything that you do to ultimately come up with how you're going to get it done, there's going to be a lot of folks that are going to disagree. And so behind the scenes, I had my advisory team that kind of helped, you know, help me, you know, kind of massage which way we were going to go with all these things. But yeah, time and time again, there were folks out there who said, nope, you can't do it that way. I wholeheartedly disagree, including the location. And yeah, you had a really strong leader, a strong advocate like Steve Hildebrand, who is an expert at, you know, running campaigns and motivating others to vote a certain different or a certain way. So yeah, it was a real challenge, but ultimately, you know, the city of Sioux Falls did vote for having it at the events or at the arena and convention center site. And I think it's paid incredible dividends. Well, I know it has.
Why didn't you agree with him? You respected him. Oh, you listened to him. Why didn't you agree with him? Why not downtown? Why were you convinced that he was that was not the right decision for the city?
There were a variety of reasons, and I talk about it in the book in terms of the reasons why I felt the event center at the Arena Convention Center site was the best one. Some of those reasons included: you already had a bevy of infrastructure already ready to go, not only including ample parking, but you also had plenty of access points in and access points out. Number two, you had the ability to attach it to these other buildings that were already out there. Flat floor space is a really, really big idea, not only for concerts, but also for conventions and farm shows and sports shows. And so having that ability to have contiguous flat floor space with an event center, arena, convention center, and so much more, that was really important. Also, financially, it made really a lot of good sense. You know, we wouldn't have to build parking ramps. We wouldn't have to do anything unique in terms of sewer lines or whatever, because all that infrastructure was still out there. As well as, here's something that maybe folks should probably, you know, understand when it comes to voting. The folks that vote are those that are of the active generation, folks that are, you know, 65 and older. And again, it kind of goes back to Lori. When I was campaigning, I really did have a good pulse on the people. And the folks that I knew that would vote, those that were 65 and older, they would not vote for downtown. No way. No way, for a variety of reasons, but they were not going to vote for it downtown. It just didn't make that common sense, that business sense, that prudent sense that, yes, the active generation really, really cares about. Mm. And so, yeah, that was another important reason, is that, again, in order for you to get anything done, you got to get it passed. And in public service, that means a lot of times you got to have folks vote yes. And in this case, if we had 50% plus one vote yes, we would have a new event center. Well, we blew that away and more. And so, yeah, really, really excited.
Let's talk about that 50% plus one. Yes. Because you also spend a few chapters in this book about compromise.
Yes.
There's a point in your political career where you leave a party and become an independent. You're an independent today, yes, if I understand that correctly, because you don't like the division that's happening in national politics in Washington. And yet there's also this other idea that some people could see as contradictory, which is, I don't have to be liked. I just need to get 50% plus, which seems like you're not as interested in, you know, consensus building or compromise, but yet you're also sort of opposed to this, you know, this divisiveness. Split that hair for me.
Well, I will.
Yeah.
Again, in the spirit of getting things done, you always have to find the common ground, the compromise. You have to utilize the communication and the coordination to ultimately find a way to make that happen. And if you're going to lead, you are going to have to realize that you're not going to have everybody like you. Now, there's a lot of public servants, and I talk about this, I think there's a lot of politicians that have really, really high approval ratings, 70% or more, and they don't do a dang thing serving the public in terms of getting things done. My style is, I think that there is a to-do list that the citizens have. And if you're going to truly effectively lead and effectively serve them, well, then you should attack the to-do list. And that ultimately means trying to find that compromise, trying to find that common ground and getting it done. And that's what we did. Now, was it easy? No. Was there disagreement? All the time. But as long as I had 50% plus one, And in some cases, and I talk about it in the book, I even needed less than that because I could use a mayoral veto and still get things done with 3 out of 8 city councilors. Again, in the spirit of making things better than the way that I had found them in the city of Sioux Falls. And ultimately, I really, really excited, you know, really, really pleased that we were able to make all that happen. But yeah, there's controversy always when you lead.
There are, messages in this book to other public servants. It seems like, many times it's written for, other mayors in other towns, other lawmakers in other states or other cities. One of your pieces of advice is pay attention to your traditional media outlets, be open with them, have a good relationship for a number of reasons, one of which is there are a lot of journalists out there who are going to come after you with their nasty social media presence and their aggressive nature. Make sure you know who your local newspaper is, your local public radio station is. Tell me a little bit about your advice to other public servants about partnering with the media and being open and as transparent as possible. And do you think you always were?
First of all, the book was written for other public servants. It really was other mayors, other commissioners, other counselors. That's why I wrote the book. In my mind, it is truly, if you read this book and you have any interest in public service at all, and that doesn't mean you have to be elected, you can just be a citizen, the book is for you. And you bet, there's a chapter in there about the importance of what I call earned media. And what that means is that you work with the media outlets in your town, in your state, whatever it would be, in the spirit of helping to get that message out there about why something should be done or can be done, or this is why we're going to do it in this way. Because the media still is a really, really important outlet to make that happen. Now, it is evolving, and we could talk about that for an entire show, Lori. But still, whether it be radio, or TV or newspaper or whatever it would be, there is still a lot of folks out there that pay attention to it, and having them help tell the story is really, really important. And that's what happened when I had the honor and the blessing to serve in Sioux Falls. The media, I've tried to be as available to the media as any public servant maybe has ever been. I was always there. I would answer any question. I did it face-to-face. I probably had more press conferences than maybe any mayor in the past. And again, it was in the spirit of, all right, you have a question? Let me know. I'm going to answer it. And there was only one promise that I ever made, and that is there were going to be times where we agreed to disagree. But ultimately, I would tell you what I thought, I would tell you what I believed in, and I would tell the folks why I thought it was best for the entity that I served. And in this case, it was the citizens of Sioux Falls. And I tried to be as open, I tried to be as transparent. Let me repeat that, Lori. I tried to be as transparent as any public servant ever. And I still believe that I was. There are times in public service where, you know, for example, whether it be a policy or a law or a lawsuit or a whatever, that you bet you did have to say, you know, I can't speak on that right now. But ultimately, I tried to be as open, available, transparent as I possibly can be, and I try to still do that today.
Were there things that you wanted to be open about that you didn't think you could be?
That's always the case, whether it be in family, in a business, in on a sports team, or in public service. For example, you'd have an advisory team, and ultimately you would try to, you know, work behind the scenes for the spirit of the community that you served. But you there were times where you would keep it within that advisory team until you knew exactly how you wanted to move forward. Because I will, I do touch on this, you know, doing things management by committee, or having more task forces, or having more public meetings of this or that. You can do that, but ultimately, it's not going to be the most effective way to ultimately get things done. At some point in time, you have to actually make a decision. You do. Knowing that a strong percentage of the people are going to say, yeah, but we disagree, or yeah, but we need more time, or yeah, but let's have more meetings, more discussion, more due diligence, more of this and more of that. No, at some point in time, and my business background truly was brought to light here. At some point in time, whether it be in the boardroom or, yep, in public service, you make a decision and then you move forward as a team in the spirit of thinking that was the right thing to do, and then you live with it. Are mistakes going to be made? You bet. And you learn from those mistakes. And in fact, in the book, I encourage people, make, and I hope this is appropriate, but make some dang mistakes. Mm-hmm. Make some mistakes. And so sadly, people in public service, they're so fearful of making a mistake. You know, what are people going to think? Are you kidding me? You're going to learn from it, as well as you're going to reach higher. You'll dig deeper. You'll do better if you have a mistake or two.
Mm. Let's talk a little bit about some of those days. You know, you're from Yankton.
Yes.
And I've lived in cities across America. Yep. And then, of course, much time in Sioux Falls and as Sioux Falls mayor. Were there days when you went out and you realized, you know, Sioux Falls has always been your home? You know, you don't become the mayor of a town that you don't feel connected to. But were there days when you saw the citizens of Sioux Falls, the people of Sioux Falls, rising up in a way to collaborate that made you really just proud to be not only their mayor, but to be from this part of the state, this part of the country?
Yeah, and I'll probably get a little emotional here, and I are you kidding me, Lori? We tackled things not only in the year that I was running for mayor, but for the 8 years afterwards where I had the honor to serve. We tackled things that folks couldn't ever imagine would get done. I mean, we started talking about a new indoor pool in 1962. The event center topic came up over and over again and couldn't get it done. Lori, pension reform. We tackled pension reform. That is something that all across America they can't figure out to do, but we figured it out. The citizens, the employees, the leaders in Sioux Falls, we figured it out. And then, we were being recognized nationally for all the things that we were doing during that 8 years. And I had a pride that you could not believe for the people of Sioux Falls, but yes, also for the people all around Sioux Falls, and yes, South Dakota, because when South Dakota won, Sioux Falls won. And oh my goodness, when Sioux Falls won, South Dakota and the surrounding area won. And that's why, you know, we kind of started this conversation about Mayor Mike. Yeah. Kind of coming back to that. I was proud to be the mayor of Sioux Falls. And I had folks from all over this area call me Mayor Mike because I think we were kind of all in it together. And I just, I'm proud of it today. And I miss it. I miss it in ways you can't imagine. And so much of it goes back to what we were able to accomplish as a team, as citizens, as leaders, as people who really cared about, you know, making a difference. And I couldn't be more proud of what we did.
We talked at the beginning of this conversation, I'm going to circle back to that, to this, you know, desire that you had early on to run for governor. And when we think about what can happen in Sioux Falls and what has happened in Sioux Falls, what continues to happen in Sioux Falls, there is, and you have a statewide audience right now, sometimes there can be this disconnect that Sioux Falls is disconnected. If you were governor if people ask you, and I'm not asking this in a campaign way, yeah. I'm asking this in a leadership way. Do you think those same principles can be brought to the governor's mansion and pier for an entire state, not just this one city, you know, who had a business community, an economic opportunity, a diversified economy? I mean, the state is a very different sort of, entity. With a lot more diversity than you see in Sioux Falls, as far as farmland and ranchers and tribal lands. Tell me a little bit about what your vision would be for the state from a leadership perspective, not sure. From a I'm running for office perspective, because I do understand that you're not currently running for office.
No.
So, but from a leadership perspective, what do you see the opportunities are for the state of South Dakota, for South Dakota listeners?
Well, Lori, one of the chapters in the book, it touches on my business acumen, and in there, I say it very, very clearly. I strongly believe that government should be run like a business. I do. And that's very controversial. It was. It was during when I was running for mayor, and it was during my 8 years in mayor, serving as mayor in the city of Sioux Falls. But my goodness, if there was an opportunity in Sioux Falls to make government more responsive, more accountable, more productive, more efficient, have higher quality, better service principles. If we could do that in Sioux Falls, you can only imagine what you could do on a statewide basis. The budget's dramatically larger. So the opportunities within that budget are incredible. The efficiencies that you could create, the opportunities are even greater than they were in Sioux Falls because, again, the organization is bigger. You've got more employees. You've got more departments. You've got operations all across the great state of South Dakota, as well as the ability to drive success, to motivate others, not only the citizens that you serve, but maybe most importantly, the employees that are serving alongside of you in the state of South Dakota. Can you imagine the difference that you could make doing that? And what you saw as mayor and what you will read about in the book, Serve, Lead, Win, those principles, they would be taken to Pierre, they would be taken to D.C., they would be taken to Yankton, they would be taken to your church, they would be taken to your football team. There are principles that are within that book that if you truly want to lead, if you truly want to make a difference, if you want to leave things better than the way that you want to that you found them, if you want to motivate others and you want to get things done, Serve, Lead, Win will tell you how to do it. We did it in Sioux Falls, and you bet the opportunity to do it in Pierre on a statewide basis would be phenomenal. I would use the same type of approach that I used in Sioux Falls. I would do the same thing in any leadership role that I would be honored to serve in, whether it be in business or a nonprofit or in public service again.
It seems to me that the book Serve, Lead, Win is a little bit like the My Man Mike truck was before your mayoral race, but it's sort of driving around right now. Parked in some places, trying to figure out what's next for you, getting some awareness. Do you see it as that? As a, you wanted to write it because you wanted to check it off this list, but also it's working, hopefully for other people, and possibly even for you to sort of figure out what's next. Do you see it like that?
I do.
Yeah,
I do. The politically correct answer. I could have given you some politically correct answer, but again, it's not my style. If you read the very last chapter of the book, the conclusion, it touches on that. You know, people have been wondering what the My Man Mike guy or the Huther guy or the Mike guy or the Huey guy, they've been wondering what I was going to do, since I was in sixth grade at Yankton. And now people talk about it even more. And to the good folks that are listening, all across South Dakota and all across this region that listen to this great program, I'm still trying to figure it out. And I really am. I mean it sincerely. I think about it every day, multiple times a day. But ultimately, you have not figured it out.
But if you have the same approach that you had before, and I suspect that you do, yep. you're also listening to people. What are people telling you? Where is the need? Not necessarily as far as what office should you run for, but where is the need that South Dakotans are telling you, like, this is what we want. This is what yep. we're hungry for.
Well, people followed me, certainly, when I was the mayor. And they're still following me today, whether it be, you know, my television show on the road with Mike Huether, to whether it be reading the book or just seeing me at an event here or there. The biggest thing that people tell me is they want me to get back into some sort of public service role. And I'm really blessed by that. I think they saw what we were able to do. For the most part, folks liked my approach. And I think they truly, truly believe that even if they didn't like my style, they truly knew I really cared. My heart was in it. And I think that that's important. I don't want to be a politician. I truly want to be a public servant. And so I think folks, they tell me, Mike, you got to get back into the ring. But I think what they also then talk about is getting things done. Whether it be...
That's my question. What do they want done?
Citywide, statewide, nationally, there is a perception that things just aren't getting done, especially in government. They saw how we got so much done, maybe at a rate that's just unbelievable.
So they express it to you in that sort of ambiguous way, like sure. we just want stuff done, or they have a sort of event centers kind of thing where they say, we want this done. I want this done, and I think you're the guy to do it. What are those issues that you think are important to South Dakotans right now that they want done? Or they just want to believe in government again?
They want progress. They want things checked off the to-do list. They want compromise. They want common ground. They want collaboration. They want some dang communication. They want people working together. And, you know, honestly, it's not happening at the level that it should. And so I think they're looking for that leadership to ultimately make that happen again. They saw that we did it in Sioux Falls. And now ultimately, you know, can it be done elsewhere? I know it can. But it would be a ton of work, a ton of effort, but ultimately, you know, I know it can. Now the decision is just, you know, what does this Huether guy do? And more importantly, the people that love him, you know, not only my family, but my good friends. When you're in public service, you realize you don't have as many good friends as you really thought, because it's so difficult. But ultimately, you know, we'll have to figure that out. Right. But yeah, people want good things to happen, not only in their family, not only in their community, not only in their business. They actually want good things to happen in government. And they tell me that.
And if the book is authentic expression of what you're saying, it might not be you, or it might not be just you, because you're trying here to inspire the next generation and, you know, people of all ages to show up for their school board elections and for their... So it's a Mike movement in some ways as well, if the book is authentic to what you're trying to say.
I had a community last night that I had a conference call with last night. There were eight community leaders on a conference call with me, and they're trying to get something done that is so long overdue for their community. And we talked about some of the principles that are within this book. And ultimately, you know, they took some of those and I said, let's talk again. And again, it's done in the spirit of, I just want to make a difference. I've sent that to more mayors, that book to more mayors and more public servants in South Dakota than probably, you know, any other book before. And I've got a lot more mayors that I want to send it to. And my intent is to get it to as many of them as I can. In the spirit of, I want it to make a difference. If God takes me tomorrow, this book, if folks read it, they will become better public servants, better leaders, better coaches, better bosses. they will do that if they read this book.
The book is called Serve, Lead, Win. My guest has been Mike Huther. Thank you so much for stopping by. We really appreciate your time today.
Thank you, Lori. Thank you.